This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, April 23rd, 2008.
Terrific. Now we're one short, and I know that one is coming.
I'm assuming Jules and Jim will be here.
And all this is because Leon has joined us.
Again.
Leon, if you hadn't joined us, we'd be good. No. Okay. So maybe that's the good thing to do is in this situation, in the absence of quorum, we'll say a couple of housekeeping things and also welcome both a present and new member, and one which will be a future member of the assembly. And Leon Lawrence has been elected as an employee delegate, and he is with us today. Thank you. And then Ed Strong is just recently elected as a graduate and professional student delegate, and he will be joining us on May 7th when we convene with the new members. But he's here in spirit and in fact, in body as well. And I said to him, because Tamara Pardew is not able to be here, she's away, and that he might, if he has any thing to offer about current deliberations, might be allowed to speak. Are you a member?
I am.
Terrific. In what capacity?
I'm a guide.
Oh, okay. So you are Roger?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. So now we have a forum and we can proceed. Thank you. First thing I want to do is ask if there are any additions to the agenda. Okay, Dan. Why did you say your piece? It's only a short matter.
The last thing that I was at was quite a while ago. We had somebody from the net here talk about the UA, the board, the University of Health Services. Since then, I discussed with her, and I was going to propose a resolution to change the board from a special board to a two-person liaison to the University Assembly. Now, since that time, someone from the ESA has expressed interest in the board as a distinguished term structure, and input from you guys is what you want to do. We don't really have time to discuss it today, but likely the next week that's something I want to bring up.
You're here May 7th?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Okay. If we can do all the business we need to this meeting with the code, and don't need a meeting on the 30th, then May 7th would be the appropriate time to do that. Okay, next on the agenda is looking at the minutes. They were given to you more than a week ago, and then recently resent. Do we have any comments to the February 27th meeting, at which Dan brought up the question of the university, or Dave brought up the question of the University Health Services? Any comments? Okay, who moves to accept them? Dave does. Second? Rodney? All in favor? Any opposed? Okay. Minutes for the 26th of March, our last meeting. Any comments? This is the one at which we discussed the certain portions of the code that we had agreed upon and that we asked for reconsideration. Any comments? I've read through them. I think they pretty well accurately reflect things. But you don't need to take my assurance. Okay. Do I see a motion to approve them? Randy? Second and Dave. All in favor? Terrific. Excuse me. Opposed? Fine. Let's go forward. Now we come to the main item of business, and that is the campus code of conduct. I have 7 copies of it. We had 8, and they're being shared across with the thought that you folks have either printed out sections or have them available to you on your laptops. Those of you who have laptops, please do avail yourself of them there. Any others who need to have one, please feel free to ask. Who is? Okay.
The author asks for one.
Okay. No. So we won't. Anybody else? Okay. Well, you can share. This is new to you, so maybe what we ought to do, this was in your packet for today. It's a memorandum. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Right. This is a memorandum dated 22nd of April from the Codes and Judicial Committee, which is in your handouts for today. Before we begin, I'd like to have everybody, since it was not previously, came to you recently, have you read that through, because it summarizes what we're going to be discussing. Okay. Anybody need more time? So there'll be 10 questions. All right. I think it's useful for us to just go through briefly the comments from the letter, just to see what we'll be focusing upon today. And to preface that, I'd like to say that, remember, we considered 6 or 7, I think, I don't know how you want to count them, points that were being reconsidered as a result of the President's letter for requesting reconsideration by the UA at our last meeting, and those are in the minutes. And we sent those back to the Codes and Judicial Committee. The Codes and Judicial Committee, together with members of the administration, representing the president, discussed them and came to an agreement on all of them. And some of the agreement was to satisfy, one could say, objections that the or questions that the UA had raised about those in those areas. And so I think I identified those in the letter that I sent along with the revised version of the code in about 2 weeks ago, a week ago, to you. And they have to do with the removal of a clause that that said that that applied to avoiding serious disruption in the university's educational environment in two places,
page 19 and 20,
and the addition of the word even, which was more or less just an omitted word, nothing controversial about it, and then on page 31. Clarification of the wording concerning disclosing confidential information, where the paragraph reads now, the university may disclose otherwise confidential information when required by law or when authorized by law and necessary to protect the safety or well-being of the university community members or to preserve the integrity of the proceedings under this code. That was an issue of clarification. I think that's... and those areas were all agreed upon. Those were the three prime areas of our concern. There was one other two. I'm trying to find it. But page two. Okay, thank you. Okay, yes. That is the change that had brought into being the sentence: the university cannot cede or defer external proceedings when its own principles are at stake, was felt to be superfluous or unnecessary given the context in which it was found. And so that was also deleted. So in those areas, I think we had agreement across the board. What we were generally needing to do in the Code Judicial Committee was have a thorough discussion of the three areas that the CJC presents in the first paragraph of the memorandum to you, which is the role of attorney, standard of proof, and right to appeal sanctions. The as I said in my letter to you the week ago with the revised version, the standard of proof was reached as a compromise acceptance of concurrent condition, which is clear and convincing evidence. And I say compromise in the sense that it was done in the context of discussions around the changing of the roles of attorneys and right to appeal sanctions, that it was accepted by the committee as a whole and by the ex officio members on the committee and others representing the president. So basically what we have to discuss and approve, or discuss and take a motion on today, is a question of the role of attorneys and the right to appeal sanctions and the changes that were crafted by the CJC in those consultations. And I'd like to open the discussion to discuss to the area of the role of attorneys and take some comment upon it. Those pages are
12 to 14.
Right. The outline that the CJC letter says gives us is for what happened. is that the monitor use of the changes to see the CJC. I'm sorry.
First paragraph middle.
Right. Okay. Yes. The role of attorneys is a compromise. We said they may participate only for hearings involving suspensions or dismissals from the university. And in that context, we talk about cases which are not involving suspension or dismissal. That's one. And two, what happens if suspension or dismissal somehow appears in the proceedings when it had not been there before? What happens about the issue of representation? And we were able to craft a decision that said that retroactively, in a sense, the case had to be returned for availability of lawyers or attorneys in those cases. Any case, in other words, where suspension or dismissal, even though it's not initially sought, does become apparent as an option, it's in the mix, then the role of an attorney is becomes an option again, or after the first. So let's look at those changes closely on pages 13 and 14, and then discuss them. I guess it's also 12, yes? 12, 13, and 14.
Can I just make a comment about the text? I'm noticing something that might not be apparent in the text copy.
Yes.
There are some places where you'll see the exact same text and strike through that you see in underline, and what's meant to indicate there is that's new text that was added, but when we started tracking the changes in it, it was already in there. So it's new language, even though there's a strike through right before it.
I see.
Yes. If we're going to be discussing and debating these points, do they have to be filed as amendments first, or just an open discussion?
I think we should have an open discussion, and then we have a resolution to accept or to modify the memorandum, which is a memorandum addressed to us, but which we can, as we did with the original code, support in a resolution along with the code. So I think that rather than make amendments. Now, we can do what we did last meeting with the other points, which is discuss them, and then if we have suggestions for reconsideration, which I can say right now, I deeply hope we don't, we can make our points in amendment form. So, open for discussion. Dan.
Yeah, I guess later on when it is in order, I'll be moving to amend this to permit counsel all hearings, because as it is now, it really is not something I can vote for. It's not something I can encourage anybody else to vote for, or even advise my advisees to participate in should they become subject to the participation clause. I like to point out the changes I'd like to make and four reasons why I think this thing should be made.
Okay, I think we need to stand and speak then, because then we can get it to the whole forum.
Well, I'd like to amend pages 13 and 14 of Article 3, and then the two subsections, Article A3, it says, I'd like to substitute the word may for the word shall not, which makes a substantial amendment. And Part B1, I would strike everything that's in red there, because it will be redundant once counsel is available for all hearings. And I have four reasons for that. One is that not everybody, whether they are complainants or victims or defendants or whatever you want to call them, can effectively represent themselves. I know that's a tough sell to this group, because this group is just by its nature fairly erudite and outspoken. That's why you're on a body like this. But there are many people who are not that way. There are many people who are reluctant to bring charges when there should be charges. There are many people who they find it difficult to defend themselves when they're innocent, or at least partially so, either because it's intrinsic, it's part of their nature, or because of the trauma of an accusation, or the trauma of an injury as such, that they can't effectively get around the, you know, depression or the rage or just intimidation. They will meet people. This is why there are lawyers. We make jokes about getting rid of lawyers, but we can't. Because many people, including people who, in normal circumstances, can represent themselves, if they're in one of these things, may find it difficult. And so, just intrinsically, it's important that somebody, it may not have to be a lawyer, but if they choose a lawyer, they should be able to do that. So, just from that alone, to make this a fair code, we need to reinstate that. The other thing is that the administration will be represented by people with legal training. They may not be attorneys, but they will be well briefed on what the administration's viewpoint is on these things and what arguments to make and not make and sort of thing. So anybody going into this, be they victim, complainant, defendant, is going, if they do not also have that level of support at any point, any minor hearing, major, anything else, they're going to be a disadvantage. This is especially important. Now, we're making these rules not for just what's going on now and the fine personnel that are on campus now, but we also need to guard against if there are changes in the quality of administration of this code. If at some future point a judicial administrator or the police or someone become less independent, and for example, are maybe not independent at all after, you know, we need to protect against that, and certainly this discontinuity between what the students or employees and so on would have and what administration would have, that also alone would justify giving people an option to cancel if that's what they want.
Yes.
Also, the third point is that since in other parts of this code and all the information gleaned from these hearings, all the information that are brought out can be released to civil authorities. As a matter of fact, they state, you know, the letter, I believe, has indicated that they will, if they're asked to, and they might, even if they're not asked to by civil authorities, submit information gathered there. Even if a person can handle the local judicial affairs type of procedures, they may not know what sort of rights they're giving up secondhand to the civil authorities, to the public justice system, through Cornell's hearings and committees, if they don't have somebody with them that's familiar with what the procedures are on the outside. And finally, people have said, well, if we don't cut out people's right to counsel, then the president will reject this. They might. He might. I don't think he will, but he might. But I think if he does, I think it should be on his head and not on ours. I don't think that the UA should finish up its very successful year here, stripping our friends or colleagues or students, employees of these important protections. If somebody's going to do that, let it be somebody outside this group. Right? I would hate, we are not required to forbid counsel at this point. We can guarantee private counsel.
Can I?
Our prerogative, and they can set it aside if they want. Well, but I think we should go down and say that this is a flawed document without it. And certainly, I would not encourage my students to participate in these hearings unless they have the option of having a counselor with them speak for them should they become compliant or can't speak for themselves. And that's, to me, that's critical. And this is really a good judicial program.
Well, I mean, do you know that there is right to counsel for sanctions that are for suspension or dismissal?
Right, it should be for everything.
Well, and everything means
everything.
What is everything?
Anything that a person might want to make an accusation.
However minor,
they should have that option. In most cases, they have to take it. But because of these things I talked about, the leakage of information into the public judicial system, the discontinuity between the authority and the power and the training of the people that
And you know that this provides for JCCs representing for all offenses of below suspension dismissal included. You know that.
Well, they can use that if they want. But I think a person should have the choice. Most people won't want to do it. I think people should have the choice to have counsel and not have to speak for themselves if they feel they physically can't, or if they feel that it can be done better by somebody else.
Okay. Well, that's enough clarification there. I think we want other opinions voiced. I don't know whether we want to get into it. I don't know whether, for example, If you have a point of clarification.
I just wanted to respond to the other point.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. This is Andy Cowan, who's a member of CJC and deeply involved in the discussions for the past 4 weeks that we've been going through ad nauseum. I mean, no, excuse me.
Yeah, I'll tell you also, for those of you who don't know me, another bit of background about myself, which is that I'm a third year at the law school, and in just a couple of months I'll be a first year public defender in the state of Massachusetts. So I sympathize with all of your concerns. I think they're all very valid concerns. But I do want to respond to them with a couple of points. First of all, very few cases of something less than suspension go to a hearing in the first place. So in that sense, I think it's a somewhat minor change. I'll also say a bit of background on this package, which is that this is a package that came about as a result of lengthy negotiations with the gentleman on the other side of the aisle here. And I've described it to my constituents in the GPSA as something that nobody really likes, but everybody was willing to swallow. If I had it my way, everybody would have lawyers. If Jim had it his way, nobody would have lawyers. We came up with a compromise, and I think we all agree that it balances out well enough to accept. As Marty mentioned, everybody does, at any level of offense, have the ability to be represented by the JCC, and I think that ameliorates some of the concern about people being less able to self-actualize and self-represent. That if they do have that concern, they can use the JCC. You also mentioned that respondents accused need to be able to get advice on their criminal exposure or whatever else they might be facing outside of the university. And that's absolutely true, and what we've done doesn't stop them from doing that. We can't, in fact, in the campus code, stop people from going downtown and consulting with an attorney and saying, I have this hearing on campus tomorrow. What, if any, criminal exposure might I have as a result of that? In fact, they also still have the right to bring that attorney into the room with them, just not to have that attorney speak. What is something less than suspension? Why? Because the president really wants it. That's effectively why. And because I think this responds to your last point, let's be on his head, not ours. I agree generally that legislative bodies should not say yes to administrative requests just to be able to say yes in the future. I think that's bad policy and it's bad politics. But I also think in order for this body to do anything, it needs the president's approval. The president also has the authority, if he wants it, to throw out the entire system and write something new in its place, which I don't think, if he did that, would look anything like the judicial system at all. So I think, given that this particular change and this package of changes is a small enough cost to be worth paying.
Any other comments from UA members? Thank you, Andy.
Marty, have
yes.
I gotten to individual?
We are now working on right of attorney. That's what we're headed for. The others we seem to agree are satisfactory from our point of view, except for right of attorney. Well, clear and convincing is accepted at the current situation. So, and the only two we seem to need to, and I'll ask after we're done whether we need to revisit any others, but I'd like to just stick with these two and make sure we get them worked through. So it's attorney, right of attorney, and the other is appeal beyond review board. So it's not the presidential appeal any longer. It's appealed by the either judicial administrator or the accused. But we're back on attorneys again. Could we have any more UA comment on this? I think it's very important that the UA members be aware of it, and if you have any concerns to raise, you raise them. Randy?
I just want a clarification in light of this discussion. The phrase, in the capacity of counsel, does that mean speaking only?
As opposed to what?
As opposed to advising.
So a counsel, an attorney still could advise him not to speak?
Yes.
And should that be more clear in this document? Or does everybody understand that?
What's the general feeling of the CJC about whether, you mean by clarification it should say advise but not speak?
Yes.
I think at some point it does say that.
May not.
If you look at the paragraph right above it, your symmetry, where it says complaint and victim.
Yes.
See, it's not a change. But you see, it says the same thing, that the complainant or victim can have a advisor and seek to see of that person's choice, but that advisor blah, 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 and in capacity of counsel. So the same words would be here because it meant active speaking role of counsel, but that person can still be the advisor, and as Andy said, could be active and providing advice, but not actively and fully representing as a practicing attorney.
You could put the word speak in.
You would put it anyway. In both ways.
All right. Can we take a note of that, please? Speak as an option, and we'll discuss that. But that seems to be agreeable to put speak in place. Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm glad that's going to be clarified because it is a very odd situation. If you can have your lawyer there, it isn't clear that the lawyer can even whisper in your ear before you respond. It would be clear just no reason of it, so that's not for non-lawyers. But I don't want to take up too much time with this, but so many of the things in this code inserted by the administration are just so strange and beg the question, what exactly is the administration worried about? What harm would come from allowing someone to have a lawyer who could speak up and be heard, aside from just passing notes in between the ear of the person?
Elizabeth, I think that's a good question for the CJC members to say, because they thought through this not as a what is trying to be pulled over, what's trying to be pulled on us, as much as what are these changes trying to respond to in the community. And would you like to speak to that, Kathleen?
Well, part of it, and I think Jim should chime in as well, I think part of it is, you know, having some equality. There are some students who might not be able to afford a high-priced lawyer that another student could. So there's some equality by not having any attorney that goes like various types of infractions.
So it's an equality that disadvantages all students.
Well, it depends on whether you call it disadvantaging. Yeah. If, for example, on underage drinking charge, if on an underage drinking charge, a person wants an attorney, and that person can only get it because he or she can afford it, I mean, does that seem like a rational thing to allow that?
We did agree that the real serious thing, a major disruption in a person's life, dismissal or suspension from this institution, did warrant having an attorney there. And so that's why we reached that compromise, because we felt strongly that that serious type of charge really necessitated the advice and action of a lawyer.
Well, this is considering equality among students. Some can afford lawyers and some can't. The other equality that one might worry about is the equality between the students and the prosecutors, i.e. the administration.
Well, you've got the JA and the JCC. And the JA is separate from the administration.
That's why they're pointed by.
She's pointed by you guys.
Yeah, she's pointed by the UA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They worked very hard to keep her separate.
And that's what the whole yep. issue was in keeping an independent JA. If we're going to turn around and say, well, we kept an independent JA, but in fact the administration is really behind the whole JA's office, then it's a kind of, it's catch 22. I mean, what have we done? What we've said is, by all the fight that we won to get an independent JA's office, we said, this is an independent JA's office, and we're going to keep it that way. Now, I mean, in the course of the CJC deliberations, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what would happen if the JA turned, to be manipulatable. Thanks. By the administration, and there are discussions that the CJC says that we don't want to change this, or we want to amend this so that in those circumstances, the JA would not be allowed to, move forward. It would have checks upon him or her. But right now, we're not proceeding. And Dan, I think you spoke somewhat to this when you said what happens in the future when some kind of malicious or malevolent JA comes along or the administration turns to be, And, you can't... You have to have faith in what you've achieved, which is an independent JA. And then you go the next step to say, what are ways of organizing the system that perhaps have a little less of the strong legalistic sense for things like public urination or cases where you're going to have a sanction of 10 hours of community service. I mean, why should a system allow, a heavy lawyering of the system in circumstances like that? On the other hand, suspensions and dismissals, these are, crucial issues. Leon.
It sounds like to me that all of you have done a lot of work to get to this place. It sounds like it's about ready for closure. However, I think Dan, at this point, if the way that I would look at it, in the future, down the road, if things are not going according to how the UA think they should, then there's another opportunity to come back and revisit this and make some changes. But maybe it's time to give it a chance as is. I mean, it sounds like there's been a lot of work done to date. So,
yeah.
I hear what Dan is saying, mm-hmm. but if that happens, then why can't it be revisited?
Kathleen.
And that's trust.
So
Kathleen.
We addressed this in our letter. We said we plan to watch what happens, and we ask that you guys watch what happens. And one of the advantages of the present code and this new code is we retain the right to change. And the CJC always retains the right to make changes to the code. So if we see a problem, or you see a problem, as a group, we can come together and change it and continue to change it. It's just always been an evolving document, and it will continue to be. I don't see that ending as long as we have this code.
Dan. No, let's put it this way, Dan. I think we ought to do the shorter second round. Go ahead.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I think part of the problem is too that currently people have right to counsel. I don't see where that's been a big problem. It hasn't been a problem. The thing where it has been a problem is where, for example, as I recall, a couple, 3 years ago, the administration inappropriately and illegally was eventually reprimanded by the judge, had a number of faculty members arrested. They would have taken, there was talk of taking this faculty onto the JA after they were acquitted and after they were just tossed out of court. But they didn't. And I think one of the reasons that they didn't was that those faculty could have used the same lawyers they successfully used in public court to defend themselves there. Nobody's talking about separating faculty employees or so on or anything, whether it's what they did is appropriate, whether the administration is appropriate. But still, it can be a whole lot of trouble and a lot of censure involved. And I think that in... That was a previous administration. We don't have an administration like that anymore. But a future administration may behave inappropriately, as the previous one did, and be able to use a counsel free. Maybe it won't be that issue. Maybe it'll be involved in breaking the union, taking away the union members this way. Without counsel, without union counsel speaking for the people, that would become more effective. I think we need to. What this amounts to is a degradation of privileges and rights for communities. And I don't think we need to
do it. I think we need to not only help strengthen both, and this goes for both plaintiffs or complainants and accused. We need to strengthen what they can do. We need to make sure that this is an independent process. And I think without counsel's input, but I would still like to see this amended, and when you let me know it's appropriate time,
right,
I will move the amendment.
Right. Grant.
I was going to say, initially I agreed completely. And when I read this, I went back to like being a little kid and thinking when you want to settle a dispute, and somebody said, don't make a federal case. And then it seemed like to me it was an okay compromise in an evolving document in case it is a mistake. Because it may be a mistake, but I don't know. It may be a compromise between things that should be a federal case as an attorney and things that don't need to be a federal case.
And let's see. Speaking to this historical question you brought up, I don't recall that as being an issue. And I don't recall if it was an issue, who would have said it. I mean, whether it was one of those attendant rumors or whether it was in fact a fact. But that's debatable.
It remains possible.
Well, lots of things are possible. I mean, the president could declare that there's an imminent danger to the university and do something, but that's because that's the power is in the code to do that. But we can't do this in an orderly way with keeping in mind these extreme possibilities, it seems to me. But any other comments? Kevin, do you have anything you would like to say about this? Anyone else?
I just like to hear the administration reason
to the administration's reason is multiple reasons that was there. But let me just back up and second what Randy said. This has been a thorough process of review by a real hard work and the procedures he took. And it wasn't over the last 4 weeks that it was gone. And as Amy said, there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of issues and angles were examined and compromised with factions. The reason that the administration through the president had strong reservations about attorneys representing students for even the most minor infraction is because it's completely out of sync with any other policy. This university is completely out of sync with students and students exposed to other places. So you look at the policy, you go to the integrity, you look at the policy dealing with dismissal and suspension of faculty, but these are serious cases where attorneys are fully given the active representation. But for minor sanctions, it would be more an issue of less legalizing the system and to give the opportunity, preserve the opportunity in serious case and compromise. There is a model of campus code that is more educational than criminal, and that those have the broad interest of the university is in. And I understand folks who really speak and advocate for the things here, and should be affirmed and fair system for them, and that really informs our viewpoints too. But we do, everybody in this room is a university, you have delegated authority. We have to look at the broad interest of the institution. And when you talk about community, the community is broader than the accused students who come up here. We're also representing the victims of what for. And if you want to have confidence in a system that's not going to be highly complex, highly adversarial, highly dominated by things, some that folks don't feel taken up. So it's this compromised version that emerged from that. The other important point, and I just speak to this as being like you all, being involved in governance, and that is speaking to the point of Secretary of Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees relies heavily on committees. The role of the trustees do a lot of work, standing committees, special committees, and the full board. Unless it's really compelling arguments emerge against the recommendation of those committees, gives a deference as far as the governance dynamic. And I would urge you here, I've witnessed it, with the CJC, and the leadership staff in New York, and Professor Hatch, and the other colleagues work very hard in the interest of looking at the code. They're very conversant about the code, and they looked at the interest of not just the accused, but the victims of the claims of the board of university. And I would urge that the deference be given to that group and that they recommend it.
Any comments about? Yes.
I just want to point out this is for representation of both potential victims and accused. There are potential victims of different
people. I'm sorry, you said to speak.
Or okay. Unable to speak. So it's not just on one side.
No,
the other thing I always
agree with the two divisions. We just read them together.
Right.
There's symmetry now.
See, but I mean, I don't see. I think you're trying to solve the problem. Isn't the problem right now? A person can bring a lawyer to the attorney and have him speak. I mean, that's. I heard no evidence that this has gummed up the work. That's a big problem. I also, as an advocate as education as I am, whenever I hear that you're changing, you have a process where there are even, some fairly serious. Censure short of dismissal can be handed out. It's described not as a judicial process or a fair process, but as an educational process. It kind of puts my hackles up in this context, because then it becomes, why did you do it, not did you do it? And this has been used on a number of campuses. I know other campuses where the expulsion is used to give a person a signed confession. Hopefully we would never do that. But, it is so easily abused and so. And that abuse is so easily avoided by continuing, if not specific provisions for counsel, at least silence that prevent the counsel's present. Now, I see that some members of CJC see this JCC person as sort of a parallel to the public defender. And I would like you to call me back after a year being a public defender and tell me if you think that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts should limit the defense. Person's defense to just public defenders. I don't think it's right to do that. And that's what you're advocating here. Some of these so-called minor offenses are not that long. And some of the sanctions are not short. There are many sanctions short of dismissal. And so, if this is appropriate time, I'll just be a member and ask for a second.
Any further comments on this issue? All right, I think we should move the amendment, and I think we should discuss it and vote on it. Yeah. Do you want to read it?
Yeah. To amend the Article 3, page 13 and 14, to change the word shall not to the word delete shall not substitute the word may on the subsection section A 3. And strike out all the rest up there in section B1, because it becomes redundant if in section A we've given equal access to counsel to the.
Well, that's not part of the amendment. The amendment is just to remove something and put something else
right.
In there. Okay. We don't need the rationale just yet.
All right.
I mean, you already gave
it. Here's a copy of it. Somebody's taking the record.
Okay. So, who would like to second that? Do I see a second? Elizabeth. All right. We've had a certain amount of debate on it. Does anybody want to say anything more about that? Going once, going twice. Dave.
Do you have any
kind of prescribed this in the process. We're at the end of 2.5 years.
I couldn't hold it up.
I mean, you all been involved in the CJC.
I'm sorry, what?
The CJC has been involved in it much more than you have, but is looking at what the recommendations are, going forward of what makes sense for the broad university interest. The accused, the victim, the university, examining that, examining the standard of proof, examining the role of the attorneys, and examining violence, violent acts, and that's the third thing. We'll get to that and the review of that. They were discussed by the CJC, these three issues, over the last 4 or 5 weeks, and they were integrated. And the judgment, as Marty has said, on there's considerable debate of the clear conviction evidence being too severe a standard that is inimical to the interest victim. But in the compromise, I am pleased to recommend to the President that on that clear and convincing be accepted, retained in exchange for the rest of the compromises here. So it was all part of it. It wasn't, the chapter and verse of saying this is, we did have instances where victims felt very offended and reluctant to resort to the judicial system, particularly in sexual assault cases, because the accused could be represented by attorneys that could afford. And there was some chapter and verse on that. However, there are serious cases, and the compromise is, and that's when we were discussing whether to have attorneys at all, or just to have speaking roles at the JCC and all that. That's now been removed from it, but there's a powerful testimony of how some student victims, when even were to go up against the course attorneys would be present. We still have that risk now, but in any event, now it's still a serious case and stays in there as a result. So it's important for you all to know that it was sort of knitted together. It was, as Amy said, and there are provisions here the President's going to not like. And there's some you all know that we're all supporting the closure of the institution.
Dan.
In response to that, I mean, there's 38 pages here. The CJC did a very good job. Pressing and changed two words. So I don't think that disrespects the CJC in any way, or the administration or anybody else. We're in the body. We take advice from the CJC. We've taken 38 pages of advice minus, if we adopt this amendment, we've taken 38 pages of advice minus two words. True, the words carry a lot of influence. But you haven't really offered any evidence that this has been a problem. Because as you say, in serious cases, the change is not present anyway. So there are also possibility a person would not, as traumatic as to bring some charges, would not bring them unless they could have an attorney with them to bring the charges.
What did you say?
They would go to the civil authorities. So I don't think that's an issue either. I would like to see this protection. I don't want, last act of University Assembly here to be stripping this protection. I don't want to go back and have people say, what the heck did you do that? And this is, I feel a great deal of good feeling and trust towards this present administration, but I can't trust every other future. I certainly didn't trust the past one. I have good reason not to. So I think that the, just since it hasn't been a problem up to now, and it would be a significant reduction of equity between people subjected to the system and the body in Cornell University's level of preparation. I just don't see stripping these right now.
Can we have other UA comment on this, please?
Could you get an example of what the next most serious charge or consequence might be beyond below expulsion?
And expulsion, suspension are covered with lawyers. Below that, there's community service, there's restitution, right?
It's 32. Well, for employees, in case communities could be robbing time, those are the factors that the person assigns when they're in jobs.
Just a second. Could we look at 32? We need to share them. We had only 8 copies, and some people have them on their computers.
It's page 34 on the some copy.
So, did you get an answer to your question?
Well, so somebody could be asked to vacate their housing.
To vacate their housing, like their residence. Their place of residence, yeah.
And they wouldn't have an attorney. And they wouldn't.
University housing. Vacate university housing. David. Comment upon what you found out?
Well, yeah, I think worth us knowing before we vote on this vote that I think the enforced vacate housing is severe. And also being restricted from activities on the campus is quite part of important part of the person's work or educational program, that's pretty severe. So those seem like the next two in the lineup of severity that aren't being included in the with active for counseling.
Denial of diploma is not mentioned here, but that has that punishment has been used as well.
Pending completion, pending resolution of a case.
Which can take years and did take over years.
Yeah, but.
Which means you, you know, you can't apply for.
Now, a good question is, in those cases, would under current legislation, attorneys be allowed to speak at the hearings? Under current legislation.
Current code. I'd have to take a look at it, I think they can.
But not the victims. The change here of giving counsel to the victim was brand new. That wasn't on the hearing.
Okay, so what we've done is we've allowed counsel to the victim in cases of...
Not at all. They have no right to participate. The victim counsel has no right to participate in the hearing.
Right.
The amendment here is giving victims a right to counsel. Well, victims complain as well. So, I mean, they're changing what's in the current code for the accused, they're going back to the current code.
Any other UA comment?
I'm just looking at Mary Beth Grant's annual reports for the last 6-7 years, which you've got any all to the DOC, the types of sentences that were administered. Apologies, let's take it 2012. Apologies 24, season is this set, community work 248. And then for alcohol violations, it's 527, and that's the basic program that they have to go through some transfer program. That's what's been administered. I don't see in the last 6-7 years any other sanctions than this, other than in the suspension and expulsions, it's 1 to 2 a year. And I don't see any answer to your question that I can answer. The major category is community service. And then this basic program for those who have alcohol.
And I think I'll just speak for a moment about this. I think, unlike this being giving up a right and this is our last hurrah, and you know, if we do this, we're done for. I really feel like this is a step forward. I hate biting my tongue to say that. And I'm not doing it for the reasons that Mr. Mingle has said, James has said, because I really don't feel like, well, we should have a code like every other code in the campuses around the country, because we don't need that. We're doing something that's really quite good and grows out of Cornell experience. I also don't think we should have architecture on Cornell's campus like every other campus in the world, or anything else. We have to have something that's unique to us and grows out of the community, and that's what we fought for and got last time. And I think this, however, situation provides for something that Cornell has to offer, which is it has a terrific law school, and I think engaging students in legal proceedings of a lower level, and that's one of the things that we talked about, that is having JCCs be appointed in both capacities, is actually a good move. It develops more of a presence in the community of the code, and it makes it more community-based. And I think once you get the, there's a way of saying to have lawyers available on all levels of all cases is actually turning Cornell more into, like everywhere else, outside of universities' code system, whereas, you know, people get lawyered up, as they say, in the business, and, you know, you can... And I really think, in this case, we can make this adjustment, we can monitor it, look at it, and maybe even be proud of it later on as a good step. I think what goes along with this is something that's in the letter, which is the need to beef up the JCC office and actually provide more assistance to it from the central administration, because we're asking more of it. These are you know, advanced law students. You know, I think it's actually admirable to have people encouraged to do this kind of work coming out of Cornell Law School, and because, you know, heaven knows that there are other kinds of work that are more enticing for most people going through Cornell Law School, and so why not add this encouragement to it? So I think Council Mingle said, we need to take seriously the work that the CJC did. The CJC ratified this. It was not a unanimous vote, to say the least, but it was a vote of your representatives and your committee. And they thought a lot about it, and they argued a lot about it. And I think you could take their work very seriously. And I'm also a little concerned that we throw in ahistorical or things which are not. I mean, the CJC did a lot of historical work as well, and I think we can't argue out those points based on, you know, not complete information or perhaps a few ideas that may be holding over from past experiences as being the reason for turning this down. So. I'd like to see us move on it and take a couple more comments And yeah, Charlie.
I'd just like to say a word or two to support what Marty just said. I've sat with the CJC intermittently over a year or more as they wrestled with this issue. And the level of discussion has really been excellent, and it's been thoughtful. And here we are now faced with what I feel is a reasonable kind of compromise between what some people want and what the administration has suggested. And it seems to me that we ought to go forward with this. It's not the end of the line, because the Codes and Judicial Committee will continue to exist. It will continue to monitor the situation. And if there turn out to be problems with this formulation, it is, of course, at liberty to revisit it at any time, and no doubt will as things go on. But I think it's an extraordinary opportunity to come together on what is, seems to me, a very reasonable compromise.
All right, one more. Well, actually, you can talk as long as you want, but I think I have the right to call a question at some point. Yeah, go ahead.
Nothing this amendment would eliminate the GSTC or any of the process. It just gives them background if a person chooses to use it. They have their privilege now. Some use it, most don't. It does in no way this amendment in no way compromises all the work the CJC has done. They've done a beautiful job. It's great. The reason we have this hearing, rather than just going straight from the CJC to the president, the reason it stops here is that we do have the privilege of making adjustments. This is a very tiny adjustment in that it doesn't change the status quo much, because this is the right people have now, and all it does is preserve it. It's just backup for the JCC. It's not replacing the JCC. So the argument that we have a wonderful system there, it's good, but this does not threaten. All this is just backup in case somebody wants to have a little more control situation.
James.
I want to actually second what Dan just said, because when I'm going through and reading this and listening to all the arguments, it's like he said, no one has really come forth an argument that what's happening now has really gummed up the process or stopped the process or added a large backlog to the process. We keep talking about these are minor provisions, these are minor situations. But I keep thinking about when you say you have minor surgery, it's only minor when it's happening to somebody else. And I think if I was in this situation, I would want every opportunity, in case I really believe in my heart of hearts that I did something that was not wrong. And if Cornell, not trying to be vindictive, but they thought I did do something wrong, I think I have every right to use every avenue at my disposal to defend myself. And especially if it's not holding up any process, which this does not appear that it is.
Do I hear any other opinions? Okay, we'll call a vote then. And I guess the best thing to do is
we vote on the amendment first.
Yeah, we vote on the amendment first. That's what I meant. I didn't prepare for this, but I think we ought to have a piece of paper votes. Pardon me? I don't know that it's not. Why can't we? You want to have hands?
No, I mean, we
can do well. We can do well anyway. You can vote anyway. Unless it's specified in the rules, you can vote.
Well, how does the body feel? I mean, I what's that?
What does the charter say about voting procedures?
It doesn't specify. We get to vote.
It's probably open.
Can you state the lines like what we would be voting
yes
or vote specifically?
Okay, this is Article 3A3. I think we can hand out those ballots to the people who are members. Article 3A3, substitute the word may for shall not. Article 3, page 13 to 14.
I'm sorry, what are the ballots for?
This is to vote the amendment, vote accepting or reject the amendment.
What's the name on it?
We're giving them out to only people who are members of the CJC.
Why not just do a roll call?
Oh, okay. Okay, okay. All right. I guess I did. Yeah, all right. So, who calls the roll? I guess the secretary calls the roll. Okay, I'll call the roll. Bill.
Wait, roll.
I have a roll right here.
Can you say what?
Can you pass this to make a record of it?
Oh, yes, okay.
In other assemblies, we have the clerk take the roll.
What's that?
Normally, we have the clerk take the roll.
Take the roll for the voting?
Yeah.
So it should be normally we have people raise hands.
Forget about the pieces of yellow paper, folks.
So to clarify, voting aye would be to vote for Dan's amendment.
Yes, voting aye is a vote for Dan's amendment, and we're actually voting aye or nay for the amendment. Aye, accept the amendment.
If the amendment passes, it doesn't impact changes made to representation of the victim.
No, it does. It says that the victim can have counsel as well.
Okay. But and then there would be change made to the status of the victim.
And there would be
serious change in the law by this year's change to this code. And that will not change. So the victim, this will be symmetric.
What's the moment again? Where does it say it should not be?
What is that?
Shall not be married.
I'll read the amendment. The amendment is to Article 3, A3. Substitute the word may for shall not.
Which?
The second shall not.
The second shall not.
So it will read, and may participate in the hearing?
Yes, and may participate in the hearing.
Isn't it just, Marty, that the amendment is
for
to eliminate the recommendation of the CJC regarding the roles of counsel.
No, it's adjusting
it back to what it is now, as we've said. Not maybe not for hearing purposes, you want to just vote on the CJC's recommendation.
You pointed out a problem with this coming forward, and this will also extend the ability to be supported again. And so that would solve the problem.
You said it's
a reasonable
Well, if it does, then that's rejected for the CJC recommendation.
I think we have in front of us a document that we can accept sections of or the whole of the recommendations in red, and that's what this is referring to. It's saying that Article 3, A3, substitute may for the second shall not. And then in Article Article 3B1, strike all of the passage in red, so that the B1.
You're going to need to just cancel the last change there. You don't care about
this. Oh, I meant the last part. Yeah,
the last sentence in red.
Yes.
The last sentence in red.
Go back to the fully.
I'm sorry. The earlier ones don't matter.
And then you strike all the blue.
Yeah. No, it's rejected.
This is.
Well, it doesn't have to have a consideration system.
Can we vote on 3A3 and the 3B separately? Since they're two different changes.
Well, they haven't been, and that's a friendly amendment. Would you like to have your recommendations separated?
We're just taking the language from those last four sentences of that out because it was no longer necessary because it was already in this redundant. But yeah, we could say I don't understand why they both be in there. You just given people the option of going to the council for all hearings. So I thought the last couple, three sentences there wouldn't need them anymore. But if I'm wrong, let's
I do too. So we're voting on both of them together. So I guess we're doing a roll call. And Bill Liddick, accept or reject, I guess, aye or nay?
Nay.
Okay. Rodney?
No.
Nay. Leon?
Come back to me.
Okay. Dan?
Aye.
Aye. Marty? Nay. David?
Aye.
Aye. Elizabeth?
Aye.
Aye. Abe?
Aye.
Randy?
Nay.
Jim?
Aye.
Roger?
Nay.
Chris?
No.
Mark?
Nay.
David?
Aye.
Jules?
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, anyway, I'm sorry, Leon?
Nay.
Nay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8 nays. 1, 2.
We got missing one.
We
got one.
Who? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even clock you in. Alice. All right. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 to 8.
The chair can vote.
Oh, he did. I already did.
Oh.
Oh, he already did. Technically, the chair usually
does
it. The chair
is supposed to vote unless there's a tie.
Oh.
Well,
I refuse myself. Yeah, that's right.
So then that's the premises.
All right, so the let's see, the amendment passes 8 to 7.
What kind of rules are the governing body?
Robert's rule?
That's not true in the trustees or anything like that, I don't understand.
I'm sorry.
The chair has voting rights in all delegated bodies that I'm familiar with. That's what one else. They work it that way?
Yeah.
Are you sure you counted it right? It looked like a set of these people who voted less than 4 members.
I think it's more cutthroat.
Steve, is Steve here? No, there were only 16 people voting, including me. So who's ruling on the chair voting?
I think it's more custom. I don't know if it's a hard, fast rule, but I think it's generally custom that chair does not vote.
There's
no. No, the person chairing the
meeting. Chairing the meeting.
I could be wrong about that.
Well, I don't know.
I think it's the person chairing
the meeting.
That's right.
So
take all four of your votes off. No, at the last meeting, remember we said that Marty was chairing the specific chair?
And really, that wouldn't do it in tier two yet. Who knows? So that's not any problem.
But at the last meeting, that was Marty's chair, his vice chair. So it wouldn't matter.
Oh, charter.
There's only 16 voting members here.
That's right. And it's 8-7.
Okay.
Oh, 16 voting, but the chair is not one of them.
No, he's withdrawing that.
Yeah, I'm withdrawing that because I don't have Robert's rules in front of me. And I
members of the past. Well, I'll tell you, while we're waiting. While we're waiting for a decision on that, let's go on to the next point so we can get it get the matter done. Somebody made off with my copy of the code. I have an old one. Well, okay, I'll work with the old one. So the next piece to discuss is the question raised about the right to appeal sanctions. The result of the CJC deliberations was that after the review board process is completed, an appeal may be made to the president to change a sanction by the judicial administrator or the accused or his counsel. Is that right?
An appeal may be made to the president to change the sanction for a violation involving violence.
Violence. Only involving violence. Pardon me?
Well,
Violence or threats of violence.
Yeah, technically they don't.
You know what,
they can't. It's just.
I apologize. The chair may vote to make or break the tie.
Right. And so there wasn't
a tie.
I made a tie by voting, so I withdraw my tie. Don't put that in the minutes. All right, we're talking about page 30.
So, so the amendment failed.
Gary, did you say to make or break the tie?
Yes. To change the outcome.
So the amendment failed, correct?
The amendment passes, 8 to 7.
If you vote.
That is, you vote.
You made a tie.
I'm sorry. I created the tie.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. So it's 8 to 8.
It's 8 to 8.
So it's
correct.
Failed.
Oh, the amendment fails. All right, so we don't need to wait anymore.
Wait,
we'll
so you get
the... Now, historically, though, the chair is not...
Can I just repeat that?
Okay, let the parliamentarian please repeat that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, not the world's best parliamentarian, but the chair may vote to make or break a tie. And in the event of a tie, the motion fails. So given those two facts, this motion fails.
Right.
Robert's Rules of Order 10th edition as cited by harleypro.org.
All right, so the amendment fails. Since we spent so much time discussing it, let's then continue with this. And if the amendment fails, then what we need to do is definitely move on to the next one, and then we do a comprehensive discussion of the whole.
Move to extend the meeting.
That's what I said. Yeah, that's what I said. We're going to talk about the appeal now, and then we're going to discuss it. We're going to take a vote on it as a package. So we're talking now about the pages 29 and 30. The passages involved. And let me explain. I was the one who requested that we have the whole code sent to you. And as I said in my note to you, I wanted to do that because it's really important that you understand any of these changes in the context of the whole document, not just that there's 38 pages of it, but that, in fact, that these 38 pages are related, and that there's a prologue that says the essential purpose of the university's governing community conduct is to protect and promote the university community's pursuit of its educational goals. And the university as an educational institution has a special set of interests and purposes, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, in other words, that was there for folks to take account of as you were thinking about why we were doing these things. Okay? That's just a little bit of preaching. On page 29, I didn't mean just that. I meant the whole prologue and the other things that go on in the opening sections. So on page 29, we have a statement that the judicial administrator now, before it had been the president, and that was problematic, and so we said the judicial administrator shall have the right to appeal a penalty imposed by a hearing panel. And then the subsequent clause, which the president may do, said is not operative. And then the next item 2, page 29, appeals may be grounded only upon the complainant's belief that the remedy awarded the complainant is not commensurate with the injury, upon the judicial administrator's belief that the penalty is not commensurate. Okay, that's those two. And then on the next page 30, item 6, the review panel shall determine whether its hearing shall be conducted in public or private. However, all deliberations of the review panel. I'm sorry. That's not going to be. It's down item 2. No final decision of this judicial system shall be reviewed by any other authority within the university except that either the judicial administrator or the accused may appeal the penalty imposed by the review panel for violations involving acts or threats of violence. Such appeal shall be to the president, who may alter the penalty only by a written and reasoned opinion. And that last clause is important. Please take note of it. Any comments, Aaron, Andy?
I wasn't sure who the president wrote to.
who the president gave the reasoned opinion to. That we had some discussion of that, Kathleen.
We talked about that. Actually, I raised the same question. And my first thought, suggestion was that it be to the UA. But then it was pointed out to me that none of the hearing board decisions are presented to anybody. They're there in written format. Somebody can go back as public record and read them. And I think the president would be the parallel structure. His opinion would be the same as any judicial board review.
It's a public document.
I believe it's a public document. I think the JA's office keeps it. Catch me if I'm wrong here. And it gets redacted if somebody wants to see it. The names are taken out.
And one key point, I think Andrew, you would speak to this, is that the opinion would be available to both the accused and the victim.
Yeah, I believe it's given to them.
It's given to them both. So that was the key issue. Any other questions? Elizabeth.
You know, threats of violence can be ambiguous. I'm just thinking of a case that arose in the past week in which a Cornell professor was told to go and die, and there are things like that. And I wonder, would that be considered a threat of violence?
Yes. Yeah.
Sure. The professor, of course. If that person is put in apprehension and fear that person is threatening them, yeah. And would there be a panel who would have to determine whether it was indeed a valid, legitimate apprehension of fear and endangerment to the professor? Sure. But I don't think, sure, that could be a threat of violence, but in that.
I think it's very concerning.
Yeah, and we have to remember that what we're considering here is not whether that is the case, that it is a threat of violence, but at what point that would go through a judicial process. I think that's what Attorney Mingle was saying, Counsel Mingle. That is, it goes through the whole JA process, it goes possibly through a hearing review board process, it goes possibly through a review process, and then should it be appropriate or asked for by the JA or the victim or the accused. After a sanction is imposed, it could go to the president. So I don't think we need to decide whether particular things are violent or threats of violence. Yes.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that to make explicitly clear, I think it is explicitly clear in the text, but bears emphasizing, that the only thing the president can revise is the sentence. So if the hearing board makes a fact finding, and the hearing board says, you know, we heard all the facts, we heard the context, and we don't think it was a threat, the president can't revise that. If they say, we think it was a threat, the president can't revise that. The only thing that he is empowered to revise under this proposal is what the appropriate penalty goes for.
Any other questions about this? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to take a vote. Actually, could we do this by hands? All in favor of? No, just this one. I want to do this one. Okay, everybody. Anybody opposed to this one, particular one? Okay, I know. It's a straw vote. Now let's look at the whole thing. All of the changes, and I said that I'd give everybody an opportunity to look through the amendations other than these two areas that we've just considered. And David, you have one.
Okay, G4B, this is about the confidentiality.
G4B on page?
On page 31.
31.
And this language I think is new, and I don't understand it. Or to preserve the integrity of proceedings under this code. Is that like national security or something?
No, I think in fact that's old language.
Yeah, that's old language.
That's mm-hmm. old language. Yeah. It's in the current code. Could somebody clarify what is the integrity of proceedings under the code? I think it has to do with that the code prescribes certain things to be done or not to be done, and that therefore, in order for, if it's necessary to have those things be done to preserve the integrity of the proceedings, that they can that can or cannot be done in this case.
It's like a candidate which is ranking out and grounding.
Well, I think we can do that, but I don't think we need to do it now. I mean, I think you can make a proposal to the CJC, and we can consider it in the UA and strike it. Let's look at, you had another question about a comma, David.
No, it's okay here. In the letter you sent out.
It was not deleted. Yes. Okay. Okay. Fine. Any other? Randy.
On
the
University Registered Organization.
What page? University Registered Organization. There's no red there.
Page 34. Oh, right. This isn't a red thing, but it's a small thing.
Okay. Oh, okay. A small thing.
University Registered Organizations have one penalty, letters of apology, but students and faculty don't. It seems like it's a good thing to put under the students and faculty.
What?
Appropriate educational steps for members of the organization, such as referral, etc., letters of apology or directive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's for students and faculty too.
Oh, I see that.
Okay. I think we can't deal with things that are not in the red right now.
Under students, which is letters of apology and faculty stuff, that you put in there. On faculty that you put all.
So do we have a motion to accept this document as it presently stands from anybody? Rodney, with the changes and amendations. Rodney, second. Bill. So, do we want to have any debate on this? All those in favor of accepting the document presently constituted? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. All opposed? 1. And abstentions? 1. 12-1-1? That's only 14. Were there more abstentions, or did I not count somebody? I can't vote, remember? I got it this time, guys. Okay, look, I think it's important enough, let's do this. Bill.
In favor, aye.
Yes. Pat. Oh, excuse me, Rodney.
Yes.
Leon.
Yes.
Dan.
No.
No, okay. David.
Aye.
Elizabeth.
Yes.
Abraham.
Yes.
Randy.
Yeah.
James.
Yeah.
Roger.
Yep.
Chris.
Yeah.
Defer. Mark.
Yeah.
Alex.
Yes.
David.
No.
Jules.
Yeah.
Okay. We got it. All 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 4 and 2 against. Well, 14 and I'm 15. It's funny.
Somebody might have left. Who left?
Somebody left? I just called all the people.
That must mean that we voted incorrectly.
Oh, I'm very sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 no's. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yeses. That's 16. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Oh, it is 15. I'm sorry. It's 13 to 2. 13 to 2. Apologies. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. I've been asked to raise another question, and that is that I would like to make a resolution or a proposal. A proposal. It's as simple as that. It's proposed by the Codes and Judicial Committee in their letter. That is to say, in honor of the principal author, we suggest that the new code be called the Claremont Code. Would you stand up, please, and identify? All right. The honoree. Actually.
I would like it pronounced in French
manner. Well, anyway, let's bring this up at our seventh meeting. Unless there's a groundswell of opinion for that, how do you feel about it? Okay. Now this we have one other question to raise, and that is
Tommy,
yes.
I would just like to take this opportunity as the person responsible for providing the support to this governing body and the CJC, and as one who believes in shared governance, I just want to congratulate you for this act, which I think will bode well for the future of shared governance on this campus and throughout Cornell.
Thank you. Dan.
I'd also like, and this is my last thing, I'd also like to extend my thanks to administration to honor the shared government. All administrations have it, and in the right direction, that they recognize the structure is important in the VA and other shared government have obviously seen the value of bringing the ownership of.
We will at some point need to meet to appoint hearing board members who are being interviewed this week. Is that right?
And Monday.
Now, we have a meeting scheduled for the 30th. As I said in my letter, if we accomplish what we did, I think it'd be best for everyone if we didn't have to have that the 30th meeting. Now, the 7th, however, we do have a meeting. Is that too late to do that? Is that too late?
I think we have my firm and the very end of April. Isn't that an organization?
And
yeah, it is.
Elect a new board.
We elect new members. We seat new members at the 7th, but that doesn't mean that they can't vote to seat the hearing board members. Yes.
That's supposed to be appointment of the hearing board members is not supposed to be at that meeting. It is supposed to be on the 30th.
Well, once again, is that in our constitution? I mean, our charter. The point is, can we do it on the set? At the set?
Can you email them? That's the only thing.
I don't think so.
I don't know whether we can get a quorum on the 30th, Roger. But the fact that, I'm saying, why is it that you don't think so?
The appeals. I thought that either it was in the charter or it was in the campus code. I mean, I can look into it, but.
Okay, we still have a number of people here. What is the feeling about meeting on the 30th, should we need to? Well, according to they go off on the 7th. I really I'd love to find some other way to do this, Ari. I don't know how.
But you still need to send her a letter, too.
Yeah, I need to be empowered to. Well, we voted in favor of this. I guess what we need to do is we definitely need to do several other things right now in this 10 minutes, and that is we need to decide how it is we're conveying this information to the president's office. We don't need a resolution. I think we can just have a letter of conveyance that goes along with this and basically recommends. Most of the ideas here. If you want to take a look at the rest of the ideas in the CJC letter, one of the important paragraphs that we haven't discussed is that the CJC recommending that the resources available to the JCC office and the JA office be addressed to increase work to address increased workloads additional funds to cover their increasing workloads. I mean, we don't need to vote that because we don't have the power to give the money, but we certainly can in accepting the revisions that have gone that we've made and sending them on to the president. We can recommend everything in the letter as a whole. Would you be willing to, as members, accept that? Yeah, I see no need for a vote. I see assent all around. Okay. The other thing, are you looking this up now?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What's yes?
Is it possible to empower the CJC to appoint, make the recommendations to appointments to the hearing board? I don't know if you need to make a motion to do that or.
It would have to come back to UA anyway, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because they can't.
Okay, quoting from the campus code of conduct. For other candidates, the Office of Assemblies will solicit, faculty members are nominated by the Dean of the University faculty. For other candidates, the Office of Assemblies will solicit written applications, and a Dozen Judicial Committee shall nominate candidates to the University Assembly for its confirmation no later than the last regular meeting of the outgoing University Assembly.
Okay, that's pretty clear. So our last meeting has to be the
30th. I'd like to change that in the code, too.
Well, come with me.
What?
I think we're too slow.
You can
do it early with that.
Well, the earlier then would be now.
Well, May 7th.
But we haven't had
May 7th is a new meeting. That's the new one. I suggest that we could, we can't defer. How about email confirmation? How about electronic confirmation? Do we have that anywhere prohibited? I know arts and sciences had to go through a process to do this, but by email. Yeah.
Could it be delegated to the four chairs or some subgroup?
That sometimes happens. When the meeting,
I can look that up now.
The meeting cannot. I remember hearing that, but the four chairs can do this. Yes, Dan.
Since we're taking a little time, what's the decision to come up with the names and present them to the new assembly? Because by the time they happen, they're just going to wait.
The CJC is planning to meet on Monday. We're doing the interviews on Friday. Monday, planning to meet on Monday and make our recommendations. What you all want to do with us, that's our plan.
Why can't we meet next week? Was there no
question? Well, I thought there was a groundswell of feeling against against the meeting next week.
There is.
We're trying to work around the code too. Yeah.
And we need a majority. And why should we get 8 people here and then not be able to meet?
Well, I don't know what Robert's rule provides in the way of email votes. Does it?
I don't.
It was dead.
You know, it's from a week ago.
All right.
Still dead.
I'd like to suggest that we empower, if it's not in the charter, it can be, when the UA is unable to perform certain duties, the four chairs be permitted to do so. Okay, second. We have a groundswell of opinion for that as well. All right, thanks. With that, congratulations, everybody. We'll see you on the set. We'll see some of you on the set.
For the record, guys, there's that.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.